You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. We begin with candidate Barack Obama, who spoke yesterday before a crowd of 200,000 people in Berlin. We've been talking about the speech all week. And when he spoke yesterday in Germany, he revived a metaphor which may be familiar to you students of history out there.
The greatest danger of all is to allow new walls to divide us from one another. The walls between old allies on either side of the Atlantic cannot stand. The walls between the countries with the most and those with the least cannot stand. The walls between races and tribes, natives and immigrants, Christians and Muslims and Jews cannot stand. These now are the walls we must tear down.
Walls, powerful concepts for a city, Berlin. When a president spoke there in the past, Ronald Reagan and JFK, there was literally a wall between East and West Germany. But we wanted to invite Stephen Erlanger, New York Times correspondent in Paris, to discuss what new walls actually are going up between the United States and our allies in Europe that may represent something of a strategic and geopolitical shift in the region that the next president will definitely have to deal with and perhaps will be a theme for all this century. We're joined by Stephen Erlanger from Paris. Thanks for joining us, Stephen.
Thanks.
You know, when Reagan and President Kennedy spoke in Berlin, it was a fairly easy bipolar world. There was the East, there was the West, there was Europe versus the Soviet bloc and all of the proxies. Now it seems as though Europe is as much a rival of the United States as an ally, and there are even other groupings beginning to form, political and otherwise, which could mix things up a bit. How do you see this notion of walls and rivalries between Europe and the United States?
Well, Obama talked about a lot of walls, but there's another German metaphor which still exists in Berlin, which is called the wall in the head. I mean, concrete walls, brick walls go down, but walls in the head tend to remain. And that's true in Germany today as well. And I think it is also true between, you know, Eastern Europe and Russia, for instance. Between America and Europe, what you've had is really 8 years of bad feelings and bad temper. The second Bush administration has been more emollient. But the first Bush administration with Guantanamo, with the open decision to abandon the Geneva Convention on prisoners' rights, the ridicule of the Kyoto Climate Change Treaty, all this struck the Europeans as very ideological, as driven by a kind of neocon notion of the world and not their idea of the world. And so this remains, and any new president's going to have to deal with it, and it's going to take more than a tone poem to sort of get over
right.
it. Part of the problem, of course, is that there is economic rivalry. I mean, the United States and the European Union, these 27 countries share values, they share belief in the rule of law.
And the strongest currency in the world.
Well, exactly. You know, and biggest problem is, of course, the American debt rather than European economic strength. But there are more people living in this bloc than live in the United States. The economy is, I believe, bigger. It gives much more foreign aid to the rest of the world. It is not united as one political entity, but it is a kind of new experiment in shared sovereignty and in issues as real as relations with Turkey or Russia, or as sometimes pathetic or tiny as the issue of American poultry imports into Europe. There are different sets of rules and understandings. The European Union has set up a whole set of its own trading rules and regulations, its oversight of American investment into Europe, which is rubbing the United States sometimes the wrong way.
Let's talk about some of the new experiments for just a second. Sarkozy has this Mediterranean cooperation group that he sort of inaugurated within the past month. And you alluded to Russia earlier. What temptations are there for Europe to create multilateral alliances or connections with Russia as it ascends as a energy power in the world, second only to Saudi Arabia?
Well, Europe has long been dependent on Russian energy, particularly natural gas. And actually, during the Reagan years, which you mentioned before, the United States tried to stop the Europeans from having a pipeline to Russia that went through Germany. That dependence is real, and it is in Washington's eyes, and would probably be true in any new president's eyes, an argument against the Europeans standing up to Russian claims on its former Soviet Union territory, for example, Georgia, Abkhazia. There's a whole fight going on about Russian influence in the former Soviet, now independent country of Georgia. And the Americans are very confrontational with the Russians about it. The Americans want to bring Georgia and Ukraine into NATO. The Germans, the French, the British are saying, wait, not so fast. We don't want to annoy the new Russian president, Medvedev. It's not clear these countries will be good partners in NATO. Let's put it all off. The same is with Turkey. The United States thinks its great ally, its relatively moderate Muslim state democracy, Turkey, should be in the European Union, as the European Union promised years ago to bring Turkey in. But France and other countries are dead set against it.
Well, again, so a complexity that's going to require, as you said so aptly a moment ago, more than a tone poem. Stephen, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to do it.
Stephen Erlanger is a New York Times correspondent in Paris. A lot of tone poetic walls.
I love the phrase tone poem.
Good. I think that could be the takeaway for today.
Well, in fact, that, I was just going to say, is his brief description of that speech.